Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, and today we will be dealing with police stops and public policy enforcement. We're going to deal with the following questions. How should we handle a traffic stop? How do we handle our tickets in court? Can we sue over traffic tickets? How should you handle traffic tickets in the mail? You get something in the mail, how do you handle that? We're going to go over this again. What is a valid cause of action? What is illegal about a traffic stop? Are policemen officers of the law? Does the United States of America have citizens? These are just a few of the questions that we're going to deal with here today. And it would be a good idea if you all have some paper and pencil, because we're going to give you some real simple stuff to do behind these traffic tickets. When you go inside these courtrooms, there's a way to deal with these people. And we got a segment coming up, and so you might want to write down what this guy's saying, because this is some real sharp information here. And we're going to lay it out here for you today so you can defend yourself, because in actuality, the entire operation is illegal. The whole thing is not only illegal, it's wrong, and it's crooked, okay? But we're going to go to a little quick break, and we'll be right back. Hold on.
Moving the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt. During a natural disaster or an economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, for more details. Area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Monael Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and, of course, B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request, and you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, Moses, we back. Now, let's take a good, hard, realistic look at this situation so that you will clearly understand when you're out there on the road, if you are operating your vehicle, your automobile, in this case, and that's what you should refer to it as, an automobile, and you are not being paid to drive. Now, this is not what I'm saying here. This is what the Supreme Court has ruled on over and over and over again. The only person, that needs a driver's license and somebody is being paid to drive. If you are driving a taxi cab, you're driving. You're being paid. A company is paying you. If you are driving a tractor trailer, if you are driving a city bus, a school bus, a handicap van, and you're being paid, then you are at that point officially driving. If you are operating your automobile, and you're going to the store, or you're going to church, or you're going to your mother's house, or your father's house, or you're going to school, and nobody's paying you, then you are traveling. You have to clearly understand the difference between driving and traveling. Now, what I would like for you to do is you can go to Google and simply type in driver's license versus freedom of right to travel. Just type that into Google and go down to complete listing, and it will all tell you the same thing. The only people that need a driver's license are somebody being paid to drive. Now, as far as the automobile is concerned, the law stipulates the difference between an automobile and a vehicle, and it clearly describes for you what this vehicle should look like. It should have weigh a certain amount. It should have a certain amount of doors, a certain amount of space. It should weigh a certain amount of tons. And the average one of us operating a automobile, it doesn't fit that category at all. It doesn't fit. And so you want to look up these codes and rules and regulations and guidelines so that you can clearly have a defense. Now, the next thing is this. When you are pulled over by a policeman, the first thing you got to understand is that this man is not an officer of the law. He is not an elected official. Okay? He is a private contractor. He's attempting to separate you from your purse. This whole thing is fraud. He's attempting to stop your flow. Just like you, Brother Todd said, you got a river. And as long as that river is running, it has life in it. The plants on the side, the plants in the water is alive, the fish is alive. But when you put a dam up and restrict the flow of water, you get leached, you get, you know, it dies. The river dies. There's no more life. And what is happening on the streets throughout the United States is there is a national attempt to stop your flow, okay? And when these people cut on their lights behind you, they are declaring an emergency. If there is no emergency, the contractor has committed a felony. You understand? When he's asking you for a driver's license, he's asking you for property that belongs to someone else. If you take your driver's license, look on the back, it clearly tells you that it is issued and is to benefit the state in which you live. But we're going to get to that state thing, too, because there's some very, very revealing information that we're going to put out, and I want you to pay very close attention to this thing. And then you look at your driver's license, and there's a photograph of you, was supposed to be you, which is not alive. It's dead. Then it's got a title up there that's supposed to be your name, which is in all capital letters, which is spelled as an improper noun. So you got all of these things to your advantage. The only thing you need to know is how to stop yourself from being robbed, because it is a robbery. These are highwaymen. It has absolutely nothing to do with law whatsoever, nothing. Now, the Supreme Court has also ruled that speeding is not a ticketable or an arrestable offense. But the problem is, when these people pull us over, the first thing strikes us is fear. We have fear. This man, a woman, they have a weapon. So what they're doing is they're actually pretty much robbing you at gunpoint. It is a robbery, and you have to look at it like that. So what we need is evidence that can be presented for a grand jury, and we need to understand what to say so that we can get away from the fraud and expose the truth. And he's telling you to step, I need you to step outside the vehicle. Okay. Here's a ticket. I need you to sign this, which means that you are agreeing to contract with us, and you are agreeing to allow us to rob you. That is exactly what's going on. I mean, you know, we have to look at this situation like this. Now we're not talking about going out trying to argue and all this stuff. I don't do that. The only thing I want to know is who you are. And once I find out who you are, then I'll do the paperwork on you. And we'll be joined at the hip until this thing is over. Now, once you start defending yourself against these people, I mean, you might have to go all the way down to the ground on this thing, because these people are bent on robbing you. I mean, they got the guys that are masquerading as judges, and you think you're in a courtroom, but it's a circus. But anyway, we'll take a quick break, and we will be right back and continue with this informative broadcast. Make sure you got your pencils and paper handy. You got to have plenty of time to go get it, and we'll be right here when you get back, okay? Oh, yeah. We'll be right back. All right, Moses, we back. Now, I hope you got your paper and pencil. Now, we got to look at this situation this way also. And just remember, no evidence, no case. So when we are pulled over, the first thing we want to begin doing is gathering evidence. Now, I've already told you that your automobile should be equipped with a dash cam. Right there in the back window, that dash cam should be mounted, and you need one on the front panel up top so that you can record the entire attempted robbery when it happens. Now, also, there, if you go to the spy shop, and you may be able to purchase this stuff online and get your little miniature audio and video cameras so that you can get this information and it can be entered in as evidence. The bottom line is to, whenever this happens, you got to remember that you have been, you're in a position where someone is attempting to rob you. So we have attempted armed robbery. And the fact that they have a weapon on their side, we have a potential for attempted murder. Now, if they are telling you that they are taking you to jail and it's during the hours, morning hours, before the courts are closed, and they do not take you to a magistrate's office, now we have aggravated abduction. Now, if you call the FBI, the FBI will tell you that if you are told by a policeman, which is a private contractor, to step outside your vehicle, and you do so, you have a volunteered for abduction. Okay, and we want to make sure that we are recording this entire attempted robbery. Okay, there are certain key questions that you want to ask for the record so it can be clearly added to the record and we can hear the attempted robber's response so it can be clearly heard and added to the record as evidence while you are inside the vehicle. Never roll your window all the way down. You want to roll it down just enough to get this guy's business card and gather all the information that you can for the lawsuit. Now, what you want to do is find out from this guy who his superiors are. If it's a sheriff, whoever it is, this is the man that we want. We're not concerned about the actual robber because this man is being paid to go out on the streets and rob people at gunpoint. This is the bottom line of what's going on. Now, if any of you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line and let you in before we go any further. Area code 904, who we have on the line here?
This is Grand Nicole.
Grand Nicole, how you doing, sister?
What's
on your mind? I'm just fine.
Well, I didn't have any questions or comments or anything like that. I was just calling in.
Okay, now you have a broadcast coming up Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and what's going to be the name of your show?
Well, it's going to be called the Grand Nicole Morning Show.
Okay. All right. And I'm supposed to be a guest on your show at 11 o'clock Friday morning. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Well, I will be there. And so I know you got your questions lined up that you want to ask, and I'll do my best to answer them.
Okay.
All right, sister, I appreciate you calling in. Just you can check
out
the show when we keep on. You're welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Now, if anybody else got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand. If you got a ticket out there, And keep in mind that this guy needs you to consent. He needs your voluntary consent to sign the ticket. He's willing to threaten you with jail and anything that he can in order to rob you. He needs your permission to rob you. And all of this kind of stuff is going on. But you should have a bigger plan. You should be prepared to go the distance. We get this guy's name, his badge number, if possible, car number, the number of the vehicle he's driving, what time of day it was, what the date is that the attempted robbery took place, and then that we can hold his superiors responsible for his behavior. And we can clearly put it together in the affidavit. We can send it to him and have him respond through the mail. Make sure you're doing this through the mail so you can keep up with the evidence. Make sure that you are downloading and uploading all of the audio and video surrounding the attempted robbery. That way, all of the questions that you have asked this man, and so you have evidence to be presented into the record when you actually file the lawsuit against his superiors. And if we're going in the small claims court or what have you, $5,000 max for each violation. If you're adding human rights violations, I don't think you should write that under $50,000. The rights of indigenous people, you shouldn't do that under $50,000. And all of this should be included in your affidavit to this man's superior every time they roll you. And make sure that you have all of the Supreme Court rulings listed there so he can clearly see your right to travel have been violated. There's been extortion, attempted robbery. The weapon involved makes an attempted murder. All of this information can be put in there. And you should also put clauses in there where fees and fines and court costs and all that is to be paid by you. And as one of your points, it's paid by the offensive party, and it should be put in the affidavit. This thing should be notarized. It should be sent by certified mail with return receipt, and the entire process should be exhausted. And you have to keep in mind that in a lot of cases, until y'all learn this stuff, the prosecuting attorney, the private contractor, and the so-called judge, or the man that's masquerading as a judge, all in the same bed, okay? So we want to make sure that we get everybody. We find out who the prosecuting attorney is. Look up his type him in on Google. Find out if there's any complaints, anything like that, then you might want to deal with him too. But nevertheless, you want them to get the message that when they mess with you, there's a serious problem. It ain't going to go away until all the questions are answered. And if you go into court, I mean, a good question to ask him, the policeman, is are you an officer of the law? And what will happen in a lot of cases, these prosecuting attorneys will jump up and try to defend these guys, you see. But we want to maintain the hanging out to dry process, so to speak. Now, we're going to listen to a gentleman by the name of Mark Stevens, and what he's going to do is show you how to deal with these people in that courtroom, okay? Exactly how to, and I mean, it's real, real simple. We're not fighting. We're asking questions, and we're shutting the lid on the box, so to speak. So we're going to run this, and I want you to pay very close attention to what this guy is saying.
Mm-hmm. biggest part of that book, and there's a lot of, especially when you get, you're doing some brilliant stuff in here. Hey, listen here, you guys with the traffic ticket out there. When you go in there, there's things you can say to the judge. You can ask the judge and the prosecuting attorney questions, and you can box them in. You're talking about how to box them in, so they really can't wiggle much.
They try. They try. They're pretty sneaky sometimes.
Yeah.
But what I typically do when I go in, I get the ticket, I don't believe in fighting. I don't believe in disagreeing. I don't believe in going in saying, you don't have jurisdiction, or you're this, and you're not following the law. What I notice is that if I agree with them and just question them based on what they've already told me, it quickly falls apart. For example, what I like to do is I like to go in with a proposed plea of guilty. And anyone in the traffic case can plead guilty. That's generally it's generally the way they want it, though.
Yeah.
But you go in with a proposed. It's not signed.
Mm-hmm.
It just says, I have had my rights read. They have explained the nature and cause of the charges and proceedings to me, because I'm not a lawyer, I don't understand this, but they've informed me, and I'm waiving my right to appeal, and all you have to do is sign it at that point. Mm-hmm. As long as it's unsigned,
yeah, they can't do anything with it.
So what I like to do is I like to go in and say, like I just said, I'm not a lawyer, I don't understand what's going on, but I would like to plead guilty. I don't want to have a trial, I like to avoid this whole thing, and I got a life and I got a job. But I don't understand all the ins and outs. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I can be informed, I'd be more than happy to pay your fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now this gets them pretty confident. Well, okay, what are your questions? And I said, well, all right, well, am I entitled to a fair trial? Oh, yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, Mark, you're absolutely entitled to a fair
That'll
trial.
That'll puff their chest up, won't it?
Yeah, we're fair in this court. We're fair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. And one of the things I'll ask is, am I entitled to a meaningful hearing? Oh, yes. So if I ask questions, I would expect that you'd be responsive. Oh, yes, yes. If there's something I don't understand, you'll do your best to explain it to me. Oh, yes, okay, great. So one of the questions I'll ask then would be, am I presumed innocent of this alleged crime? And this is pretty basic.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, yeah, of course you are.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I usually keep notes when I go. Okay, good, I'm presumed innocent. Well, am I presumed innocent of every element of this alleged crime? Now, this is where the problem starts. Now,
I'm laughing because I know the answer.
You go ahead. Well, he's already told me. He's already told me that yes, I am presumed innocent. Now I'm just asking to be specific. What am I presumed innocent of? Am I presumed innocent of every element? Now, the last time this happened in Mesa, Arizona, the judge was the only lawyer in the room who was not laughing. All the lawyers behind me thought I was crazy. And this is not just prosecutors. This is also defense lawyers and public defenders,
mm-hmm.
who are supposed to be there to make sure that each defendant has his rights,
mm-hmm.
his rights maintained and not violated. And I'm not there with a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're supposed to be even more giving, if you will. And they're supposed to be a little bit more helpful to you, so you know you don't understand what's going on. So the judge looks at me, his name is you're presumed innocent of the charge. Move on. No, I can't do that. I don't understand.
Don't understand the charge.
Don't understand. I just need a response of yes or no, sir. Am I presumed innocent of every element of this alleged crime? Like I said, the lawyers behind me are having a field day, making fun of. I can hear the comments. one of them actually said, well, how many elements do you think there are? Well, I'll get to that. That's not my burden to know how many elements. That's the cop's job,
mm-hmm.
or the prosecutor. So at this point, Robin is beat red. I mean, this judge, well, he's doing a bad job of pretending to be a judge. Oh, he was furious. At this point, you are presumed innocent of the charge. Move on. Sir, with all due respect, I can't move on. I don't understand. I need a responsive yes or no. Just yes or no. That's all he could take. That was it. Security was called in, and I was thrown out of court.
When something like that happens, for somebody sitting back in the bleachers and looking at that, and they don't understand a thing. They know something went wrong.
Yeah.
What went wrong?
Well, went wrong. Well, actually, nothing really.
For him.
For what went wrong for the
prosecutor.
The prosecutor and the so-called judge. What happened for them was they boxed themselves in and actually made my case for me. Or rather, they showed that they didn't have a case. Because what they did was they admitted I was entitled to a fair hearing, mm-hmm. and a meaningful one. They said that they would answer my questions responsibly, which they haven't done. They acknowledged that I'm not a lawyer and I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And they've acknowledged that I'm entitled to be informed.
And as long as you don't understand the charges, it's required by law for them to explain them to you.
Right, and they refuse to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I do explain to people in a peanut gallery, if they ask me, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
Why did the judge get so upset with you? Why did he call security to have you taken out of the courtroom? Mm-hmm. You didn't raise your voice. Mm-hmm. You weren't disrespectful in any manner. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is, to get a little bit more technical, is that jurisdiction is an essential element of any alleged crime. And if he has to presume me innocent of every element of that alleged crime, he has to presume there's no jurisdiction. He can't hold me for pretrial.
You know, that went fast. Say that again. Okay. If he has to assume that you're innocent of all aspects of the charge, he also...
Jurisdiction is an absolutely essential element of any crime mm-hmm. or any court case.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically the judge's ability to hear the case at all, to hold you, if you will, against your will, in his room, his courtroom. So if he has already admitted that he has a presumption of innocence, that has to apply to every single element of the crime,
yeah.
or you're not presumed innocent. Well, as a matter of black letter law, mm-hmm. if their jurisdiction is an absolutely essential element. If I wasn't in Arizona on the day the police officer says I was,
okay.
or I wasn't within the state, to be more accurate, then there's no case.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually get them to admit that if I'm not within the state on that day, there is no case. There's no jurisdiction, there's no crime.
Mm-hmm.
So I make sure to get that admission first. So here, the judge, Robin Allen, was the only one in the room, besides myself, who understood what was going on.
Yeah.
He understood if I admit that he's presumed innocent of every single element of this alleged crime, I know this guy. He's going to come back and then say, are you presuming there's no jurisdiction? Now he's boxed into a corner. Because if he has to presume there's no jurisdiction, he can't hold me to answer for this ridiculous complaint
right.
against me. So this is why, to keep anyone in the peanut gallery from picking up the ball and thinking, hey.
Or everybody that's sitting behind you waiting to get in your chair.
Right. So to keep all those people from getting any ideas,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to cut this guy off before anybody figures out what he's doing. Because apparently the lawyers are just out in my field. They're not getting it.
They couldn't catch it.
But maybe someone in the background is going to get this. And even if they don't get it, I don't want them coming up here and doing the same thing. So, oh, I know what I'll do. I'm going to start screaming, and I'm going to call security and have this man removed. And I'm going to just completely ignore everything I said about fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And a fair trial, and due process, and justice, and I mean. You can see if you just take a progression and get certain admissions from him.
Yeah.
It's not that the law requires me to be informed. I didn't ask him, well, does the law require me to be informed? No. I asked him, am I entitled to be informed? And he gave me his opinion.
Yeah.
So they'll... What I've noticed is that the law means nothing. If it gets in the way of a conviction, we're gonna ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like it, appeal it. And that's the typical
yeah.
sneer that you get.
Absolutely.
Never mind that appeal is never forthcoming. They
mm-hmm.
forget that part.
Okay.
So trying to get them to contradict the law is really just...
It's difficult.
Well, you can do it all day long. It's difficult to actually get a case thrown out because they did contradict the law. Well, so what? If you don't like it, appeal it. But I noticed early on that it's very embarrassing to contradict yourself, especially when you're in a room full of people
mm-hmm.
who respect you to a point that they will murder on your orders.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by murder, that they will use physical violence against you, the police officers or whoever the security is there. Given the order, they will attack you.
Yeah.
There's no thought involved. They just follow the judge's orders. And I've had many, many experiences with police officers, and it's not an attack on police officers, but I've had many, many personal experiences where police officers have told me flat out, I follow the judge's orders. It's not my job to question what the judge says. I just do what he tells me. One of the things I discuss in the book is that some of the most egregious, heinous acts that you can imagine have been justified because they were according to the law.
Legal.
It was legal.
Of course, the thing about it, though, is that a lot of things is happening here now that is not legal. It's contrary to both what it says in the statutes and the codes and the court rules.
That's correct. And one of the fallacies I bring up in the book is that people claim, politicians, mm-hmm. and you can read it in books and history books, and you can read about it in schools, that, well, the Constitution created a limited government of limited powers, and that if it goes beyond the scope of the Constitution, it's illegal or unconstitutional. Well, that is a lie, and I'll explain why. Mm-hmm. Because one of the most important phrases, the only really important phrase in the Constitution, is the Necessary and Proper Clause. And if you, and a lot of people like to say, hey, let's get back to the common law. Let's get back to that. Well, one of the things that comes out of the common law, which the Constitution is supposed to be read in light of, mm-hmm. is a phrase called necessites non habet legem, which most people have no idea what this means.
Well,
what it means is necessity has no law.
Okay.
Oh, what is it? Wow. Mm. So from the common law, which people think is a great thing, we have this rule of necessity. And it means that if some bureaucrat, whoever's doing it, mm-hmm. let's say the bulldozing of a church,
yeah.
if someone deems it necessary, the one who ordered the bulldozing, oh, it was necessary, oh, it's good to go. And
almost as good as national security.
Yeah. Yeah. And that fact, that's kind of two lies.
Yeah.
It's very, you have to look at politics, and politics is usually the only profession, if you will, where you can have two words, a two-word phrase, be two mm-hmm. lies.
Mm-hmm.
One, that there's a nation, and two, that they have a duty to secure you or to provide protection.
Yeah.
So what I go through in the book is, one, there's no nation.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get into the details of that.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why there's no nation, why we can prove that there's no nation, is the security issue.
Okay.
What's the job of politicians? Why do we have bureaucrats? Why do we have government? Why do we have a so-called state? What is the purpose? What is it? Why is it there? Well, if we go to the Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. it tells us, and it says that governments were established or instituted to protect life, liberty,
and property,
or the pursuit of happiness,
mm-hmm.
and that this is supposed to be by consent. Mm-hmm. And if we listen to what politicians tell us, what a citizen and a state and all these things are, we'll examine the citizen for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
And most people just figure, I was born here, I'm a citizen, but they really don't go into exactly what it is. Well, what is a citizen? What makes me a citizen and somebody who crosses over from Mexico or Canada or comes in from some other country, what separates them from me?
Mm-hmm.
And a citizen, as told by the Supreme Court in Lurie versus the United States, and I'm not going to bog us down mm-hmm. too much of the legalese,
right.
They say that is a member of a body politic
mm-hmm.
who owes allegiance in return for a duty of protection. And Lurie uses very specific words and says that these are reciprocal obligations. Now, lawyers will know, and anybody familiar with contract law, they're talking about a contract. In fact, in the Dartmouth College case and many other cases, the Supreme Court has ruled and never been overturned that citizenship is a contractual relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a duty of allegiance in return for a duty of protection. They're reciprocal. Okay? They work together hand in hand. You do this for me, I do that for you. Now, we know allegiance is the only thing that ties you to their mm-hmm. so-called law. You agree to follow their laws in return for the protection.
Mm-hmm. So, with other words, there is no citizen.
Well, there's got to be a reason why.
Yeah.
Give me some evidence. Give me some reason why you're saying this. Well, we know if a citizen says, I renounce my allegiance,
mm-hmm.
he's not entitled to any protection.
Right.
He's on his own.
Mm-hmm.
this is pretty common. People expatriate, they do it all the time. They come from Canada and they become citizens. They have to abrogate their allegiance and to the foreign potentate or king or minister, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I did was I looked at the other side. Well, what if the other side of a contract, this reciprocal obligation situation, what if the other side says, you know what, I'm going to cut you off. I'm not going to protect you. In fact, even if I say I'm going to protect you, I'm not going to allow you to hold me accountable if I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say sovereign immunity. That's right. I have sovereign immunity, so even if I did have a duty, a technical duty to protect you, which you pay taxes for, if I don't protect you and I breach that duty, you're not going to be able to hold me accountable. See, similar to a so-called congressman.
Mm-hmm.
A so-called congressman can never be held accountable for anything he does in office to his so-called constituents.
Yeah.
So he really doesn't represent them.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in this particular case, what I saw, and there was a case here out of Arizona, way to the Arizona Supreme Court, there was I believe it was out of Gila County,
mm-hmm.
and a man owned a jewelry store. And what he did was he contracted with off-duty Gila County sheriff's deputies to protect his store. The alarm goes off, you guys show up, and you protect my store. Well, they didn't fulfill their duty. And his alarm went off. He lost $250,000. I believe it was about $250,000 worth of merchandise. This is in the mid-50s. I believe it was the mid-50s. Well, he sued the sheriff's deputies, these off-duty officers. And believe it or not, the Superior Court said their lawyers, I guess, filed a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim because a cause of action is a breach of a duty that results in loss, harm, or injury.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you have not pled a duty. They don't have a duty to protect.
That's right. That was going at you.
So this guy figured, wait a minute. No, I guess, no. He appealed this. No, this can't be right. Well, it gets to the Arizona Supreme Court, and in a brief moment of lucidity and common sense and reason, which really hasn't returned too many times, the Supreme Court said, you're right. As sheriff's deputies on the job, there's no duty to protect him or anyone else. But this was different. You had contractual obligation. You had a private contract. You were not on the job. You were not Gila County Sheriff's deputies. You had a contractual obligation, and you breached it, and you cost this guy $250,000. And they sent it back to the Superior Court for trial. And I looked at that, and I said, wait a minute. If a citizen is only a citizen because he owes a duty of allegiance in return for a duty of protection, and they're openly and notoriously saying, we don't have a duty to protect you, even though the Constitution says in Article 1, Section 2, the only purpose is to protect.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no duty to protect. There's no duty of allegiance. Well, if there's no duty to protect and no duty of allegiance due, then there are no citizens.
And it's because there's no contract.
Right. And if there are no citizens, there's no body politic. And if there's no body politic, there's no state. If there's no state, there's no United States. There's no nation. So basically what you have is 280 million people who are just people.
Treated like we are because we don't know any better.
We're treated like we are because we've been bought into this public relations scheme, this matrix, if you will, that has been forced on us. And I spoke to some people yesterday on a radio show, and they, well, what's wrong with our reality?
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we? We're happy with our reality. I said, well, you know, you can be. I'm happy with my reality, and I don't have a problem with the reality anyone takes. You can sit in your house and think you're King Henry, but the moment you pick up a gun and you use a gun or any other kind of force to get me to join your reality, that is where the problem comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Have whatever reality you want. Think you're Santa Claus. Great. Run with it. Don't pick up a gun to get your kids to believe it. Don't pick up a gun to get your neighbors to believe it. And don't pick up a gun to get your neighbors to pay for your delusion. take your delusion, like, you know, take your delusion and run with it. Just keep the core. Because even though we may not believe we're citizens, mm-hmm. if you don't act as if you're a citizen, you run the risk of being murdered.
Right.
You could take any situation. If you decide, I don't accept you as my governor, or I don't accept you as an authority because I have no agreement with you, and I'm not going to listen to you, and no, I'm not going to stop driving my car peacefully down the street. Well, we all know if we're driving peacefully down the street or traveling, however you want to say mm-hmm. it, and you're not endangering anybody, but you don't have that tax ID number on the back of your car, which is the license plate, you will get a cop eventually, a police officer, who will get behind you, and he will throw his emergency lights. There's no emergency, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's never an emergency. But he has to check things out. You don't have the tax ID number. Mm-hmm. Now, the officer doesn't know that's a tax ID, that you've paid your tax. All he knows is, I was told you don't have a plate, you got to have a plate, I got to stop this person. And what if you choose, no, I'm not going to stop. I don't accept your reality.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to accept mine. It's fine. I'm not taking a gun to your head and making you accept my reality. But this police officer, his reality is now going to become yours.
Yes.
And we've seen enough shows, cops, mm-hmm. We've seen enough shows that if you don't stop that car, what are they going to do? And I'm not saying you're speeding.
Mm-hmm.
You're not endangering anybody. What is the police officer going to do? More than likely, he's going to call backup.
Dark roadblocks.
Right, and he's probably going to do that ram maneuver where they hit your car.
Mm-hmm.
What is he going to do from that point? Is he going to walk up to your car? Hi, notice you didn't have a license plate. You didn't stop when I put the lights on. Everything okay? No. The gun has already come off. It's pointed directly at your head,
mm-hmm.
and he's screaming at you to get out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who is the one who's the threat to somebody's safety at this point? Is the man who's just traveling, minding his own business and keeping to his own reality,
yeah.
or is it the police officer who's trying to get you to join his reality? However, I have been successful in impeaching every single cop.
Hmm.
And this is not an attack on cops. It's they're not taught these things.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, you know, I would ask questions not just on a tax issue. I would also ask, is it your testimony that I was within the state on this day? Oh, yeah. Well, would there be a case or would there be jurisdiction or a crime if I was not within the state on this particular day? Oh, no, not at all. So you're confident I was within the state on this day? Yes. Okay, is that an arbitrary opinion? No. So it's based on facts within your knowledge? Oh, yeah. They're currently within your knowledge? Oh, yes. So, and then I would just say, well, factually, what is the state?
Mm-hmm.
And
now they go blank on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them will admit it. I have no idea. Most of the time, the judge and the prosecutor, who are really
jump
both,
right up.
They're jumping up. They got to protect their client. They both actually represent this police officer. So they jump up, and it's the same stupid, rehearsed objection I've heard so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Objection calls for a legal conclusion. The witness can't testify. Right. Thank you. You just finished my job. You just impeached your own witness. Because what does the ticket consist of? He made a legal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You broke the law. He's already admitted and given legal opinions.
Yeah.
And like I say, like I write in the book, most when the officer first gets on the stand, he'll go through his testimony and he will give legal opinions. And I will, just to set him up, objection, calls for a legal conclusion, the witness can't testify. Now, what does the judge do? Well, he's got to have the cop testify.
Mm-hmm.
Overruled. Okay, and you write that down. He's letting the cop give legal opinions, not a problem. Now, I know when I get to my turn to cross-examine him, I will purposely get him into this corner.
Use the same thing.
And I will bring, and so the prosecutor this lawyer who claims to pretends to represent the state, he will jump up right on cue, mm-hmm. as they always do. Objection calls for a legal conclusion. The witness is not competent to testify. Now, I understand that, you know, this has a tendency to really aggravate the cop, and what good reason?
Mm-hmm.
This prosecutor is his lawyer. How dare he come into court and say he's not competent?
He's not competent, yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't want him to tell the truth, would you?
Oh, of course. They don't want the officer to say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Now, people have said to me, well, can't the officer just say it's the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Sure he can. Now he's got to tell me, because I'm entitled to be informed, I'm entitled to confront my accuser and demand the nature and cause of the charges and proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has to tell me who the prosecutor represents.
Okay.
Big problem if he's representing the ground. I don't have to explain to people that that's ridiculous.
Yeah, what's the difference between the ground and the state
and
of
the state.
Arizona?
And I have had several judges in Mesa tell me, of course, they're testifying on behalf of the police officer mm-hmm. at this point. Well, the state is an act of Congress that was passed in 1910 and created the state of Arizona. But he's not testifying. He saw me within an act of Congress. You can see just how ridiculous the whole situation is. And if it's the ground, then, excuse me, are you telling me that there was a state of Arizona prior to 1909?
Okay.
And now we got a problem because that, when was that 48 star added? Oh, that's right. The 48 star was added to your flag in 1912. Because there was no state of Arizona prior to that, prior to January 1912.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't there. So it's not the ground. It is absolutely, positively not the ground. It couldn't be the ground.
That's right.
Because the prosecutor is not representing a geographical area.
Of course, putting it to him that way, then you will destroy his testimony.
Well, absolutely. That's why they will. That's why the more astute prosecutors mm-hmm. will not allow the officer to even attempt to answer the question
mm-hmm.
because they know it's just too deep a hole.
Yeah.
But what I started doing is I don't want it to look like I'm attacking police officers and trying to get them declared incompetent. Because I never say that they're incompetent. I want them to testify.
Mm-hmm.
It's their lawyers and the judges trying to protect their little case.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, why don't I, I figured they're just not learning this stuff. They're not learning it in the police academy. It's just not something you do in a traffic case. So what I started doing, I said, look, I'm not gonna do it this way. I don't want to go to trial. Why waste time going to trial? So I started right at the arraignment. I want to plead guilty. I want to get it over with. So one of the questions I would put to the prosecutor, instead of the police officer, I'll put it to the prosecutor. He's the one claiming to represent the state.
Mm-hmm.
So what I started doing was a standard legal challenge. In civil rules, it's Rule 9A. It's the same in the federal.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask a simple question. Again, not saying that there's no state. Don't want to come off as combative.
Right.
You're not argumentative. You're not taking a position.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, is there evidence of a complaining party here? And this is the typical response from a lawyer pretending to represent the state.
Oh, yeah.
This is
he's got to come up with something really fast.
Right. This is his job. This is his job. Is, you see, when he does that, that's a cue to mm-hmm. his fellow lawyer with the robe. You got to help me here. So we had a case in Maine where this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned beet red, the prosecutor, and that's what he's doing, shuffling his papers furiously, and the judge jumps in. Well, sir, that's easy. It's the state of Maine. And the defendant says, objection, move to strike. I believe that's non-responsive. I wanted a yes or no. And two, Rule 605 of the Rules of Evidence doesn't permit you to testify on behalf of a prosecutor. Well, the judge wasn't happy at all with this. Not happy at all.
Yeah, he didn't want to be challenged.
No. And he just made this judge look kind of ridiculous.
Stupid.
Mm-hmm. So what happened was, and this is a criminal case, they bound him. The judge was furious.
Mm-hmm.
Bound the guy, hey, you're going to trial. You're not pulling this in my court. You're going to trial. All right. So file a motion to dismiss for a failure to prosecute. Look, we have one question.
Mm-hmm.
One question, or just give me a yes or no. Is there evidence of a complaining party? I mean, your burden of proof is beyond a reasonable doubt. You got to have some evidence here.
Mm-hmm.
So you're either concealing it from me if you don't answer, or you don't have any. No real gray area there. So we get into the man gets into the hearing, and the judge says, "Would you like to speak to the prosecutor before we have this hearing?" "Ah, sure, why not?" He goes out in the hallway, says to the prosecutor, "Well, how about it? Can you answer the question?" "No. No, and that's stupid. I don't even think it's relevant. We'll let the judge decide. It's not the judge's burden."
No.
So he said, "You know what? I don't care how you want to play this. But I'll tell you what. I'm looking at a year in jail. I'm going to ask the cop the same question on the stand. They give him a jury in Maine still. It's not a complete joke like it is here in Arizona where you don't get a jury. They want to put you in jail. No jury." Mm-hmm. He says, I'm going to ask the cop the same question on the stand. Mm-hmm. Right in front of the jury. "I'm going to embarrass the heck out of both of you. It's your call." Mm-hmm. "Well, I'll just let the judge decide." Because, you know, they're buddies. They work for the same team.
Right.
So they get in there, and the judge said, "No hearing. Motion to dismiss denied. You're going to trial. We're going to get a jury on such and such a day, blah, blah." And he stands up. "I have an objection." "Well, what's your objection?" "I haven't got discovery yet." It's one question. Is there evidence of a complaint?
Yeah, that's right. Discovery doesn't have to be in writing.
That's right.
Yeah.
I have my discovery, and it just... All right. Says to the prosecutor, "You've got 10 days to give this man his discovery. I have no choice but to dismiss it." Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think happened on day 11? Prosecutor withdrew all the charges. Now, I have the dismissal, the order of dismissal, mm-hmm. because he filed his motion to dismiss and the judge granted it. Mm-hmm. So I have an order of dismissal that it was dismissed with prejudice. Mm-hmm. With prejudice.
Means it can't come back.
Right, so it's not a matter of, "Oh, Mr. Prosecutor, you just need some time mm-hmm. to bring your evidence." No, you have no evidence,
yep.
and you know it, and I know it, and I don't want this guy coming in and saying this in front of a jury,
mm-hmm.
okay, because he's clearly willing to go to jail
yeah.
to ask this question, and the jury's going to hear it, and they're going to wonder why I'm putting a man in jail for asking a question.
Some of the other issues that you're dealing with in this book that maybe someone could have an advantage of by reading?
Well, what I try to do in the book is not so much, it's not really a self-help how to navigate the courts.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to do was I wanted to help people clear their mind, and I wanted people to be able to think more clearly. I wanted the matrix, if you will, or the cloud, the public relations. I wanted to strip through all the public relations so that people, if they are attacked, can see things as they are.
Mm-hmm.
When someone says they got a traffic ticket, that a police pulled them over and they got a traffic ticket, that's not what I see. What I see is a man with a gun
mm-hmm.
who doesn't respect this person's rights and is going to take control of his life and property without his consent.
Yeah.
And that's important because they put themselves out as, benevolent protectors of life, liberty, and property. But if they're protecting life, liberty, and property, why are they taking control of your life and property without your consent?
Right.
I think if you can see through all the legalese, like when the IRS attacks you, when they say that you have a tax liability and they're going to take your house,
mm-hmm.
All that's happening is you have a group of men and women who cannot do business on a voluntary basis. They can't provide a product like a book or something else mm-hmm. or a TV show. They can't do that and offer the service or the product on a voluntary basis. So what they're doing is they're taking your property by force. Mm-hmm. They're not revenue agents. They're just guys with guns taking your property.
Right.
So you look at what's happening and compare it to the rhetoric. Take their nonsense, what they say to you. "I represent the state." Well, don't fight him on that. Don't assume, he represents the state. Mm-hmm. What you do is you know that there is no such thing as a state. It's a figment of the imagination.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist, and even lawyers will tell you. It's a body corporate, which is just
right.
a figment of the imagination. And so instead of looking at him as an agent of the state, he's a man who represents nobody but himself, who's taking your property by force. And if you just question him, don't fight him. Don't say, "Hey, you're not this. You have no right." You ask him, well, what is a state? Or you say, well, exactly, factually, how was this obligation created? Mm-hmm. I don't want your opinion. Don't tell me the law. I already we got your opinion. Mm-hmm. Give me the facts. And a lot of people say, well, what do you mean facts? Well, one of the examples I use in the book is if I scream, I'm going to kill you, and then I take a chair and I break it over your back. Mm-hmm. Those are the facts. The opinion is that I committed assault and battery.
Yeah.
But if I just say assault and battery, I'm not telling you anything.
Right.
You're guilty of assault and battery. What did I do? Assault and battery. What did I do?
Could be absolutely anything.
There are hundreds of thousands of different ways that you can commit assault and battery. You're not giving me the facts.
Right.
So if they say, the law creates this obligation, well, okay, you've got your opinion. I committed assault and battery. But what facts do you base it on?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you committed assault and battery. Give me some facts.
Yeah.
And this is all the assessments, so-called assessments, that I have helped get thrown out,
mm-hmm.
and tickets that have been thrown out have been because all I did was ask for the facts the opinions were based on. But it is available at adventuresinlegaland.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You can also write to me at Post Office Box 31258. Mesa, Arizona, 85275-1258. The easiest way is to go to adventuresinlegaland.com if you have a PayPal account.
Okay.
Okay, Morris, we're back. See, we got some callers with the hand raised. I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone lines. Area code 760.
Hey, Tahaka, how you doing, brother?
Hey, I'm fine, brother. What's going on?
That's good. Man, I just got in. I just got on the line, and I was trying to listen to the show. I understand it's about dealing with police and police stops, correct?
That's correct. That is correct.
Well, yeah, but dealing with you and listening to you, I have learned how to avoid such encounters with such policy enforcers by
mm-hmm.
understanding who they are and what they are and what their fiduciary duties are.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
it's giving me great confidence on the road, of course, and actually speaking with these gentlemen. Sometimes I speak to them even if they don't pull me over, just to ask them specific questions. And sometimes I find myself educating them to the law, which is
quite
surprising.
They're not taught. Most people think attorneys are taught law, but they're not taught law either. The lawyers is the biggest game in town, and they have to control that. That's not in the school system. Never was put in the school system. Because it's, first of all, for one thing, there can be no law if there's no money. So what these people are doing is it's just not right, Robert, and what they're doing now, they have something new going now where they are putting up cameras because the people are waking up to the police robbery. So they're putting up cameras, and these cameras are taking pictures of your vehicle, and they're able to say that, well, you were speeding or you ran a red light, and then they send this stuff to you in the mail. You are to pay X amount of dollars. You can send it in by check or money order and all this kind of stuff to continue the robbery, to put sort of like put the robbery on automatic pilot, so to speak. And so you have to, if you get something like this from these people in the mail, immediately draw up your documents and get on it and go directly at the sheriff and have him provide proof of claim of an injured party and all these stuff and then sue them. You can sue these people for attempted extortion. This is and they are using the mail as a part of their scam. So we have mail fraud going on as well. So you can include that as well.
I see. Wow, it blows my mind. When you wake up, you get to all of these facts. It's impossible to go back to sleep, Tahaka. And I want to thank you for being a helping hand in that. Because now, you know, when I drive down the street, when I travel down the street, I have more confidence that I understand that running a red light or possibly speeding is not an arrestable offense. And it is illegal for them to take your property without due process. And I learned all of that from you. And I just want to thank you, because I notice now when I do speak to these servants of the people, I call them, because they're no longer an authority to me. I am the authority. And I realize, that I'm no longer subservient to the whims of that corporation who's just trying to force business upon me at every opportunity they get. And now I see why they live so well. See why they have houses and cars and boats and go on vacations, and we steadily broke trying to get ourselves and our cars out of Hawk. We try to get our loved ones out of jail and our cars out of these jails. It's just I see the big picture now, and I am trying my personal best to flip that whole scene over, and I'm letting everyone I know what the difference is between traveling and driving. One's commercial and one's private. And I found out that no state can put a privilege on your travel rights and charge you any kind of money or license it, because if they do that, the law states that person or persons, they have pure autonomy to do what they do on the road. So there's still no offense, but they're breaking the law every day, pulling people over with the siren and the lights. And, if you know the law, you know that they're breaking the law every time they hit them lights on you and try to pull you over, because those lights are only supposed to come on during an emergency or somebody being injured. So if you get pulled over with them lights, you look around and you ask the officer, where's the injured party? What's going on? Is it an emergency? You ask them what the probable cause is, and you go from there. And if he can't produce the right answers, you start charging him for your time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I learned that from you, Tahaka.
You got to stop these people, because when I found out, I began to look at the magnitude, at the financial magnitude of what was going on with this particular scam. This was the biggest scam, one of the biggest scams in the United States. We got, first of all, we got the law taken out of schools. Second of all, we got private contractors, just like a plumber or a roofer. Somebody comes to your house and he says, I'm looking at your roof. You really need a roof on your house, and I'm a roofer, and I'm qualified. And you might tell that guy, well, look, I know I need a roof, but I can't afford to pay you to put a roof on my house. And the guy tells you, well, look, if you don't let me put a roof on your house, I'm going to get up there and put the roof on there anyway, and I'm going to force you to pay me. And this was pretty much what's going on. You don't make a cut on your blanco before making a right turn, you owe me money. You don't come to a complete stop, you owe me money. Your tag out of date, you owe me money. So what we have is we have enforcers that's on the street enforcing what's called public policy, which is masquerading as law, and they're nothing more than what's called highwaymen. They're stopping you and taxing you. And the driver's license, the price of the driver's license is going up, so they're getting that money. They got you, they're working in cahoots with the car dealerships, because when you purchase a car, well, your car got to be registered with the DMV. And so you might want to question these guys about law, because it's a big scam. Okay, then you have insurance. You got to have insurance. They came out with a new element to raise more funds when they came out with the inspection stations and all of this kind of stuff. Your car has to be, your emission has to be inspected before you can do this or that and the other. You have to be, your car has to pass emission inspection. Then you had the inspection stickers. All this is designed to make money, period. That's all it's about. Debt notes. Okay, and these people living in exorbitant lifestyles, the judges, is actually the policemen out on the streets collecting revenue to be processed through the court, but the court is keeping the money and not giving it part of to the actual men that's on the street committing the robbery. And then you got the tag and the price of that going up. So this is a big scam, and this thing is happening in all 50 states across the United States. But if everybody in this country that's listening to this broadcast, if you get 25 or 30 people in any particular city across the board to start doing the stomping buck dance on this thing, these people had to come up with another plan.
That's right.
You see.
That's right.
All we need is 50 to 75 people in a particular city to say, look, we traveling. We ain't driving. And if you roll us, we're going to roll you.
Indeed. Because I'm not getting, because I'm about to have a child. And I'm still worried about what's going on with this birth certificate when I have this child in this birthday. Because I know, you know, they all in cahoots, you know, when it comes to the hospital, the police, the courts, and everything. But I'm trying to keep my family totally out of the arm's way, if I could. And I don't have enough money to be paying them every time I want to move.
Yeah, I understand. And the key to dealing with any of it is to study. You don't have to know. You got the rules and regulations. You got the court cases. You got the ordinances and statutes and stuff. Look into stuff. And you have to. These people have to understand that, okay, when we deal with this particular guy here, there's going to be a problem. So the best thing to do is leave this guy alone.
Yes.
Now, as far as the birth certificate is concerned, if you got somebody floating $1 million bond against a birth certificate, and you got this thing, well, you might as well go ahead and cash in.
Right.
Understand the trust. Go ahead and get you a little. You can call you I know some guys. These guys did Wall Street, but they can get your CUSIP number for you. You can go in and deal with it like that and take advantage of it if they're doing that. Or
okay,
you have another choice. You can just get completely out of the system. You can collapse the bond and just get the whole thing done, finished. Look, I'm done with you. My nationality is, I'm over here. When you roll me, then you can't roll me for under $50,000 or $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to cause you to roll me. So when we learn how to put this paperwork together and send it right to these people and just make sure that they understand that anytime they mess with you, they're going to be joined at the hip. It ain't going to go away.
Right.
We ain't getting you. Your robbery, we're going to have to foil the robbery. And the problem that we've been having is our beliefs and the things that we believe in. We believe, we don't understand the crookedness of the system. As a man, I said, if me and you went to rob a bank, you drove the getaway car and I went in the bank, and I come out with the money, I get caught, the police catch me. Was it wrong for me to rob the bank? Well, the average person said, well, yes, it was wrong for you to rob the bank. But what they don't understand is it wasn't wrong for me to rob the bank. The problem was I robbed it wrong. Because if I had robbed it right, then I would have got away. So we got to change our thinking.
I got you.
About to say. You got a man coming up to you with a gun and a badge on. You ask him, well, excuse me, sir, are you an officer of the law? If he says yes, he is, he's lying. But in nine times out of ten, no, he's not an officer of the law.
Right. Because an officer has to be elected to office, right? Isn't that true?
Right.
Go to a church
and ask the church, go to one of them big ones, and ask them, do they have any church officers, and they'll say, yes, we have some officers. Did y'all have to vote on? And they'll tell you, yeah.
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 And so don't argue with these people out here on these streets with these guns and badges, because these people have orders to rob you. Their orders come from their superior. So what you do is you get them and their superior and neatly, you always want to do this neatly, tuck them under the bus. And every time they do it, then they'll find out, well, okay, this guy, he live right over here, and this is a car he drive, and so whatever you do, don't stop that car right there, because, see, he ain't with the game.
Yeah. He got the bus behind him.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring a big bus. So when they do, let's just say they do pull you over, they try to sue you with that little certificate they call a ticket, and they want you to show up to court. I know that they force you to sign that ticket by coercion or by taking your property or, you know, trying to tell you, well, we're going to take you to jail if you don't sign this. I know that's threatened arrest, you know. I love that word. Now I know what it is. So you have to go now signing these particular documents. Do I need to get a press or something? Do I sign it, you know, with all rights reserved, or how would I go about protecting myself? Because we have to sign this ticket or they're going to steal our property. You know, they're going to GTA.
The first thing I did. Because they don't mess with me no more. They didn't got enough of me. But what I did was, the first thing was I said, well, look, I've given you my documentation. You clearly got it. You clearly see what's going on. I got my own place on my vehicle. I don't understand. Here's matching ID to the place that's on my vehicle. Now, I say, if you guys want to, you can take me to jail. It's okay, you know. You do what you got to do, but I guarantee you ain't never seen nothing like it in America when I get through. And so they said, well, look, we need you to sign this ticket here. I said, I can't sign nothing. I said I put my seal on it. They said, well, put your seal on it. I said, okay. So I take and put a very small X right there. That's my signature.
Okay.
That was respected in the United States, so that's what I put there. And, of course, they don't like that. I said, well, you go ahead on and take me to jail. I said, I'm not after you. I'll mention you in my paperwork. I said, but I want to sue your boss, and I want to sue his wife, too. And that's what I'm after. So I let him know that you're responsible for him getting ramshacked. So what they decided to do is put me on a no stop list, and I know what it did to my watching, and you know, keep him under surveillance. You can watch all you want. I'm gonna show you something to see. And I'm gonna get back out here on the road again, and when you roll me, I'm gonna roll you. So that happened twice, and the second time it happened, they had about 30-something police out there, and one of them come over there, and he got my book, and he went looking through it, and he said, where you at? He come over to the truck, he looked in there, he said, that's him? Yeah, that's him. And he come back, and he gave the one that pulled me over the book back and told him, said, you do anything you want to do. He said, but when he starts suing, he going to get me because I'm out of here. And he got his car pulled off, and all 30 police officers got with the 5-9 right behind him. They were like, he ain't getting these. And so now I'm standing there with him, and he looking at me with his chest stuck out. Well, you know, I could take you to jail. I said, man, you can't do nothing. Give me my stuff, man. Let me go. I got in my truck, the back off, left him standing there looking at me.
Oh, my goodness. That's beautiful. Now, if when you start suing people, you sue them in the private capacity, or do you sue their corporation right along with them?
Well, what I do is I deal with these public officials man-to-man. I talk to them man-to-man. Just like one respectful man would talk to another respectful man. Now, if he's wrong, I got to point out where he's wrong at and how he's wronged me and what I'm looking for in damages. I use a very, very methodical approach to this guy. I'm going to deal directly with the boss. I want the sheriff. That's the man I want to deal with. I'm going to lay it out for him, present my case in the affidavit, list all the Supreme Court rulings, reserve all my rights to sue if I'm detained again, if I'm fingerprinted, handcuffed, put in a cage with steel and bars, if any of that happens, I need X amount of dollars for each one of these offenses. And I'm looking for this right here, and you can also ask for it in silver and gold.
Ooh,
and
nice.
Send that to him, certified mail return receipt, and if he get a lawyer, go ahead and take the law firm, get online, and type in that law firm and go over to the complaint section and find out how many people have complained about this particular law firm. And send him the same type affidavit and let him know that he's breaking the law by acting as attorney and debt collector on behalf of elected official. And then I'll attach what's called a blast letter to it, put them on notice of the fact that this information will be sent out to all the following names on this list. Every radio and television broadcast, including 60 Minutes, every major newspaper in the United States is on that list with the name of the company, city, state, and address right there for them to read. And I send that to them certified mail return receipt. And once they get that bomb, you'll hear nothing else from them. So the law firm that he ran over there trying to get done called him and told him, look, hey, man, he finna fry us too. You on your own. Wow. You on your own. We can't take this now. Go ahead on. So he talking about frying us deep. that's how I deal around him.
I see. That's beautiful. I see the concept forming already. So, okay. Man, it's a great thing.
You don't ever threaten them. You don't ever be rude. You don't want to threaten them. You don't want to be rude. You simply want to point out the law. Simply want to put all the stuff that they did wrong. You can put in there. First of all, I asked Mr. Policeman, called him by his name, he got his name, badge number, or either license plate number, whatever. If he was an officer of the law, he told me he was. We have an act of fraud being committed, and we reserve the right to seek damages in the amount of $5,000 for fraud. And then we go on to the next point. Yes, sir, for fraud. And I was approached by this man. He was carrying a weapon on his side. And, of course, I fear for my life because I didn't have a weapon in order to defend myself. And so we have I've been reserving the right for attempted murder in the amount of $50,000 against a man and not a fiction. And I sent him my pictures of the vehicle, the automobile that I was traveling in, which clearly does not fit the vehicle code. And I also sent him a picture of my identification, which clearly shows him that I did not give this man a driver's license. So we have no contract. So the entire ticket, the whole operation was bogus. Everything was bogus. And we need you to respond to this right here in 30 days. So he didn't respond. He ran. But eventually he couldn't get no help on it. So what he did was he told all the policemen, wherever you see him at, don't stop him.
Mm-hmm.
So me and the popo ride down the street, bumper to bumper. And, of course, after that, you know, it ain't no more fun, you know. So I got tired of after that, after the beating, there was no more fun. So I left it alone.
Okay, all right. I got you. So now the only time you so if I happen to, because I still have a commercial driver's license. So when he asked me for that, at that particular moment is when we're doing business, and if I hand it to him, correct?
Well,
is that what
if
that
you
is?
Give him, if you give him what he's asking you for, and this is what you have to understand. He's attempting to convert a right into a crime. All right, if he's asking you for a driver's license, if you're driving a company truck, a company vehicle, and you're being paid to drive, that is when you give him a driver's license. But if you've gotten out of that company truck, then and you're in your private vehicle and you're on the way home, there's no more need for anybody's permission to travel. You have a right to do that. So if he's asking you for a commercial license and you're driving your private vehicle, you don't want to give him that because he's asking you for property that belongs to someone else, and in this case, the state. So if you look at the back of your driver's license, read it, and it will clearly the verbiage will clearly tell you that it doesn't belong to you.
Okay.
And when you define, if you look up the words that they are using there, all of this stuff is called legalese. That's a whole different language. You
okay.
see. And what they're doing is they're skating and skirting on the outside of law because what they're doing is illegal. These are criminals.
I get it, man. I get it, Doc. They are criminals. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, I bumped into a young brother today who was a police officer. And, you know, he was telling me that, hey, man, we hired, you know, first time in my life. You know, and so much ran through my mind as, like, young man, do you even know what it is that you do for a living, you know? Do you understand you are part of human trafficking?
Mm-hmm.
You are a policy enforcer for a private-owned corporation, you know, out here harassing people. You know, I understand they do some good, you know, but most police don't show up until after the crime, and the fire department don't come until after the house burned down, right?
What you got to understand, you're dealing with people, first of all, if you look at it like this, first of all, I question the sanity of any man who will allow another man tell him that he going to give him debt, no, real money, to go outside, put a gun on his side and a badge on his chest and get out in the streets in this jungle and take a chance on getting his brain blowed out. And then go home and lie to his wife and tell her he's with her and his son, he loves him, but daddy got to go to work because he got to take another chance on getting killed. So y'all hold on, I'll be right back. That's insane. And the
that
man you working for, he out somewhere playing golf, and somebody threatened him, the first person he going to call is the idiot he hired.
Indeed.
With a gun in the bag.
That's exactly what he does. Now, I have family in law enforcement. I'm pretty sure a lot of people do, you know. Some don't, but a lot of people do. They just don't talk about it, but I don't mind speaking about it because, it is what it is. Like my brother-in-law, he's a high risk sex offender. What do you call it? He checks on high risk sex offenders. You know, okay. he's got about 75 people. You know, in this county down here that he checks on. You know, make sure they ain't got no toys and video. You know, anything. But I love that about him. But on the other hand, he crazy. You know what I'm saying? Because he run around here like he's Superman. You know, and it showed me, because I remember when he first went to the academy, and when he left, he was just a regular old guy. When he got back, he was Superman. And so I know that they train them to try to have that authoritarian mindset, because they totally outnumbered out here, you know.
Yeah.
But they have to keep that upper hand, because if they don't, you know, everybody's coming for them, right? So.
Yeah.
And another thing I noticed, because I've traveled the world, and I used to live in a European country, and the people that they call police out there, they treat those individuals totally different than how people respect the police here. The people in Europe, they do not respect what they call police out there. I've seen more people yelling at police, telling them to get out their face, get away from my car, who are you, what are you, I don't know you, in Europe. And it shocked me because, you know, I'm thinking, man, if that was LAPD, so he would have been lumped up in the back of the car, and you wouldn't have seen him for a few days, you know what I mean? So I think other people in other countries, they understand this, that these people really have no authority other than to protect the public, you know. But
well,
here,
actually, to be honest with you, they tell you about protect the serve, but what we have to look at is we have to look at the employees, the elected official. Yeah. When there's a problem, go to his boss. That's as good. What we try to do is, in a lot of cases, we try to deal with the peon, and the peon, he don't know. You get him on a witness stand, and you ask him, did you file a valid cause of action against me? And he'll say, yes, I did. Well, could you tell me how many components or elements are in a valid cause of action? And he's through right there. Now, his buddies, the prosecutor, attorney, the judge, they're going to tell me, objection, the witness is incompetent to testify. Well, if he's incompetent, I move that this case be thrown out. You just tell me you got an idiot. So let's get rid of this right here. He said he filed a valid cause of action against me, and he don't even know what one is. Help me.
Right. That's beautiful.
Hold on, let me open up this other line here.
Yes, sir.
Erico 716. Are you with me? 716.
Greetings. I didn't press the button. I don't know what happened, but greetings. I'm enjoying the show.
Okay, how you doing? Is this Miel?
Yes, it is. How are you today?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm fine. The button is pressed and it's lit up. So
I had my phone on speaker, and it was face down, so it might have pressed when I laid it down. And I didn't get the notice because my phone, I couldn't get the email notice on my phone, so I came in late. I wasn't sure what the topic was, though. But I'm just taking it all in, so when I get ready to put my vehicle on the road, I'll have everything intact.
Oh, yeah. Well, I certainly appreciate you chatting with me.
Okay, thank you. Peace.
Okay, now, bro, I'm gonna take a little quick break, and when I come back, we're gonna roll on with this thing here.
Yes, sir.
All right, hold on.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mose, We'll be right back in a moment, so you all sit tight for a minute. We'll be right back, okay?
Show you how to enforce your right to a fair hearing and to win your ticket in the process. To make this plan work for you, you must listen and speak it out loud to cement it in your brain and tongue so it becomes crystal clear in your own mind and you will be prepared for any response. You must be clear enough that you don't have to stop and think, but must always be in control of this plan. The first appearance you make in court is your arraignment, in which the purpose is for the court to present the charges and find out how you intend to react by standing up for your rights, or being fearful and an easy target. During this proceeding, the judge will inform you of the charges against you and attempt to get you to enter a plea of guilty or not guilty. A third choice is no contest, which is essentially pleading guilty without admitting guilt. Be careful, however, because as soon as you open your mouth to enter a plea, you have given them formal jurisdiction over you. If you intend to follow our procedure and win, you must not enter a plea. The judge's first question to you should be something to the effect of, do you understand the charges against you? Or it might be, how do you intend to plea? You must say no, you do not understand, or you cannot enter a plea until you get some questions answered. The judge will probably be irritated and try to intimidate you. You must politely state that you need to have some questions answered before you can enter your plea. Tell him that you do not understand the nature and cause of the action against you. Once the judge has agreed to answer your questions, your first question will be, is this going to be a civil action or a criminal action? In the highly unlikely chance that the judge answered your question by saying it is a civil action, your response will be, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record reflect that this is a civil action. Your Honor, since this is a civil action, I make a motion to dismiss for lack of a sworn complaint by an injured party and no injured party is present. More likely, the judge has stated that this is a criminal action, so you respond, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this action against me is a criminal action. Now I have another question. Your Honor, the Constitution grants this court two different criminal jurisdictions. One is a criminal jurisdiction under the common law, and the other is a criminal jurisdiction under admiralty or military tribunal venue from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. In which of these two criminal jurisdictions does the court intend to try me? Don't panic if you don't get the article, section, and clause. You'll have them down by the time you have practiced. But if you are afraid of getting it wrong, it would be wise to have some brief notes with that clause number in it. If the judge gives a specific answer, you will again say, "Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this action against me is a criminal action under whichever jurisdiction he replied." However, don't expect an easy answer to that question, as you have just exposed the court's fraud. The truth is that they are acting under a military tribunal of which they have no right to use with you. But the judge can't say that. And he can't say common law, because if he does, you will make a motion to have the case dismissed because there is no sworn complaint by an injured party and no injured party present, exactly like you did if he said it was a civil action. When you protest that there is no injured party, if the judge is silly enough to say that the state of whatever state you're in is the injured party, then say, "Your Honor, I make a motion that this case be dismissed. We are in the wrong court." If the state is a party to the case, they cannot also be the judge and prosecutors. This case needs to be transferred to federal court or be dismissed. More likely, the judge will try to avoid answering and will tell you to get a licensed attorney for such legal advice. Your response will be, "Thank you, Your Honor, but I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office if you did your duty under the Constitution. You see, I am not seeking legal advice. What I want to know is legal intent. I have the right to appear as myself in my own person without a licensed attorney, and in order to intelligently defend myself, I have to know the jurisdiction that this court is operating under, because the rules of criminal procedure under a common law jurisdiction are very different from the rules of criminal procedure under an admiralty or military tribunal. I need to know under which jurisdiction you intend to try me in order for me to proceed with this case. The Sixth Amendment grants me the right to know the jurisdiction being applied, and it grants you the duty to inform me, and I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office for doing your duty. Therefore, will you please answer the question so this court is properly identified?" If the judge still responds by telling you to get an attorney, your answer will be, "Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that I, your name here, the accused in this criminal action, has asked the court to divulge the nature and cause of the accusation upon the authority of the Sixth Amendment, and that this court has failed in its duty to inform me of the nature and cause of the action. Furthermore, let the record also show that this court intends to bring this action against me under a secret jurisdiction known only to licensed attorneys." At this point, the judge might claim that this is a statutory jurisdiction under the statutes of the state of whatever state you're in. If he does so, your next statement is, "Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that it intends to conduct a criminal action against me under a statutory jurisdiction." But, Your Honor, that raises another question. I have never heard of such a thing as a criminal action under statutory jurisdiction, and there is no such jurisdiction established in the Constitution. I would be happy to accept this, Your Honor, if you could please tell me where I can find the published rules of criminal procedure under a statutory jurisdiction, and where this nature, cause, and jurisdiction information exists. It is imperative that I have the published rules of procedure so that I may conduct a fair defense and a fair trial. Now keep in mind, the judge made up this jurisdiction. There is no granted authority for a statutory jurisdiction and no published rules, but don't expect him to tell you that. He must either lie, dismiss the case, or unlawfully enter a plea on your behalf. In rare cases, he might even threaten you with contempt of court. If he threatens contempt, say, "Your Honor, I do not wish to be held in contempt. I am simply trying to exercise my Sixth Amendment right that you disclose the nature and cause of the charges against me. I can provide court citations that show that the exercise of a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. Please either identify the properly established jurisdiction, or I make a motion that you dismiss the case against me." Also unlikely, but still possible, is that the judge will tell the truth when you ask under which criminal jurisdiction you were being tried, and will tell you that it is an admiralty jurisdiction. If this happens, you would respond, "Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this court intends to proceed with a criminal action against me, your name here, as a condition of contract under an admiralty jurisdiction as a military tribunal under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. However, Your Honor, you must realize that you have no such jurisdiction without also having a valid international contract in dispute. I am not aware of having entered into any international contracts, so I deny that any such contract exists. Will you please instruct the prosecuting attorney to inform this court if there is such a contract, and if so, to place it into evidence, and explain how I am party to it and am compelled to perform under it. If the prosecution cannot do so, Your Honor, I make a motion that this case against me be dismissed. Of course, if at any time your case is dismissed, make your pronouncement. Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court reflect that case number blah, blah, blah against your name here has been dismissed. Now leave quietly, save your gloating for outside of the courtroom. And if at any time you sense a good opportunity to make a motion for dismissal, make it, even if it wasn't part of your prepared script. You need to be flexible and jump on any opportunities that are presented to you. Let's say that the judge has had enough of your questions and decides to help you out by entering a plea of not guilty on your behalf. Immediately object. Your Honor, I object. For you to enter a plea on my behalf is practicing law from the bench, because entering a plea is my job or my attorney's job. Has the court made a judicial determination that I am not guilty? Now you've really trapped him. For him to say yes, he has admitted that you are not guilty. At this point, state, thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court reflect that the judge has made a judicial determination that I am not guilty of the charges against me. Therefore, I make a motion that this case be dismissed because the judge has determined that I am not guilty. If he says no, he has not made a judicial determination, make a motion that the plea be withdrawn and you be allowed to enter your own plea once you know the nature and cause of the case pending against you. If the judge enters a plea of no contest, object, saying, Your Honor, I object. For you to enter a plea on my behalf is practicing law from the bench, because entering a plea is my or my attorney's job. I make a motion that the plea be withdrawn. For you to make a judicial determination that I am entering a plea of no contest would result in the court treating me as though I had pled guilty. The court is trying to constrain me to an unfair plea choice in the absence of my understanding the nature and cause of the charges against me. Or let's say that the judge instead gives you a continuance and demands that you obtain a licensed attorney. Ask, has the court made a judicial determination to deny me the right to defend myself in my own person and to force me into hiring a licensed attorney that will conspire with the court to try me under a secret jurisdiction known only to the judge and the licensed attorney? If you walk out of this hearing without a dismissal, go to step 2, pretrial motions contained in your written packet. You should ask for a motions hearing, or you could ask to have the motions heard at the beginning of the trial. However, to ask for a motions hearing shows the judge that you are not willing to be railroaded so easily. Tell him that you must resolve some pivotal key issues in order to continue and that these motions must be heard prior to a trial. At a motions hearing, you cannot be found guilty, but the case can be dismissed. Either way, when the motions are heard, they must each stand on their own and be heard and ruled separately from the rest. Don't just hand over 5 motions and let the judge say all are overruled. Make him rule on each one individually. Now let's take this from the top in the manner in which it will probably happen. Do you understand the charges against you? No, Your Honor, I don't. I need you to answer a couple of questions. I need to understand the nature and cause of the charges against me. Is this case going to be heard under a civil jurisdiction or a criminal jurisdiction? Criminal. Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that this action against me is a criminal action. Now I have another question. Your Honor, the Constitution grants this court 2 different criminal jurisdictions. One is a criminal jurisdiction under the common law, and the other is a criminal jurisdiction under admiralty or military tribunal venue from Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of the Constitution. In which of these 2 criminal jurisdictions does the court intend to try me? If you don't understand the law, you need to hire an attorney. Thank you, Your Honor. But I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office if you did your duty under the Constitution. You see, I am not seeking legal advice. What I want to know is legal intent. I have the right to appear as myself in my own person without a licensed attorney, and in order to intelligently defend myself, I have to know under which jurisdiction that this court is operating. because the rules of criminal procedure under a common law jurisdiction are very different from the rules of criminal procedure under an admiralty or military tribunal. I need to know under which jurisdiction you intend to try me in order for me to proceed with this case. The Sixth Amendment grants me the right to know the jurisdiction being applied, and it grants you the duty to inform me, and I don't think you'd be violating your oath of office for doing your duty. Therefore, will you please answer the question so this court is properly identified? This is a court under statutory jurisdictions and the laws of the state of whatever state you're in. Thank you, Your Honor. Let the record of this court then show that it intends to conduct a criminal action against me under a statutory jurisdiction. But, Your Honor, that raises another question. I have never heard of such a thing as a criminal action under statutory jurisdiction, and there is no such reference in the Constitution. I would be happy to accept this, Your Honor, if you could please tell me where I can find the published rules of criminal procedure under a statutory jurisdiction, and where this nature, cause, and jurisdiction information exists. It is imperative that I have the published rules of procedure so that I may conduct a fair defense and a fair trial. Look, I'm just going to enter a plea on your behalf and set a trial date. I enter a plea of no contest. Your Honor, I object. For you to enter a plea on my behalf is practicing law from the bench, because offering a plea is my or my attorney's job. For you to make a judicial determination that I am entering a plea of no contest would result in the court treating me as though I had pled guilty. The court is trying to constrain me to an unfair plea choice in the absence of my understanding the nature and cause of the charges against me. I make a motion that the plea be withdrawn and this case be dismissed because the court has failed to identify a legitimate jurisdiction. I deny that motion. Your trial date will be such and such a date. Your Honor, I would like to request that we set a motions hearing prior to the trial date, as I must resolve some pivotal key issues in order to continue, and these motions must be heard prior to the trial so that I can properly defend myself.
Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on of growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Montiel Bay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the burden of debt. Okay, everybody, Tahaka Archives Master Library is up and running again. For those of you who have gotten a hold of Tahaka's Archive Master Library, go ahead and either give me a call or forward me your donation ticket back to Tahaka53@hotmail.com, and we'll get that thing to you. Also, for those of you who have not accessed this powerful library, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. Click on the donation page up top, and you'll see a complete listing of the packages and stuff that we offer. And, of course, Talk Archive Master Library is now officially listed, and we're back up and running. Okay? Peace.
Okay, Morris, we're back. 760, are you still with us? Okay. All right, let's continue. If anybody have any questions about what you've heard, go ahead and raise your hand. The call-in number is 310-982-4184. Next week, I'll be on two different broadcasts. We'll be on the Grand Nicole Show at 11 a.m. on Blog Talk Radio, Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. On the Grand Nicole Show, I'll be a guest on her broadcast, so make sure that you are there. That'll be 11 o'clock in the morning, and so you can catch that broadcast. Also, another broadcast on Thursday, I'll be there as well. I'm going to I got to get that information. I got it here. I don't know what I was thinking about, being so busy dealing with so many people that I haven't had time to gather everything that I needed to announce here this evening. But you have to keep in mind that if you know, just like the brother said earlier, if you know who these people are and what they can do and what they can't do and what your rights is and what you can do to defend yourself against these people, you can do some things. And you can save yourself a whole lot of money. We ain't talking about fighting against them. We're not talking about debating law with them. We're simply talking about making sure that you understand where they are breaking the law and point it out to them, and just simply ask them in your correspondence, can you please provide proof of claim that this is correct? If you put 7, 8, or 9 Supreme Court rulings on your right to travel in the affidavit, you can ask them which one of these Supreme Court justices is lying. Which one of these cases did not happen? Here's the case. Here's the case number. Here's the case law. What are the guidelines? What are the rules and regulations and the guidelines? And put it in the form of affidavit under the Affidavit Act and send this to these people. Certified mail with return receipt. And what we have to understand is we do outnumber them, but we got too many people who are not doing anything about the situation because they actually believe that these guys out there that are robbing people with the guns and badges are officers of the law, and they're not. And so when you understand this, then you can get on with the business of defending yourself. And if enough people start dealing with this situation, you're gonna have to deal with these people. You know, you don't argue with them. You don't debate with them. Every time they roll you, do up you some documentation and get it down there. Now, the affidavits and stuff that I'm talking about, this information is right there to Hawker's Archives. And you can use these templates and fashion your situation right off of these templates and get it over there to these people. And stay on top of it because we got to stop this thing. This is nothing but pure robbery. I mean, if the highest court in the land have already ruled that you have a right to travel, why are you continuing to allow these people to set up roadblocks? They set up they got the little thing now where they had the gun and they just pull over to the side of the road, just aim the gun, and if you over a certain mile an hour, you owe me money. And You got two or three cars pulled over on this side of town, and if you notice that these type of situations occur leading up to a holiday. You might have Mother's Day coming. You might have Christmas coming. I mean, they out, the robbery is a man. Ooh, it's a big mess. And they're doing all kind of stuff, and they're able to do this because we are allowing it to happen because we are not doing anything about it. So you got to stop being afraid of these people. I got to the point where when they pulled me, when they cut on the lights on me, I was like, wow, I finally got one, you know. And I was able to do what I had to do to the point where no tag, no driver's license, none of that. And a driver's license, a social security card, and a birth certificate, none of this is identification. So you have to create your own identification. And if you are creating your own identification, then you have to have your name listed as a man or a woman, okay? And so we have people in the United States, but we still have a whole lot of people who continue to be persons. All you got to do is go to the cemetery. If you're ever out in the cemetery, look at the gravestones out there. All of the names on the gravestones are in all capital letters. Everything is in all capital letters. Why? Because you never did anything about that. You didn't have a will on file. You didn't have your administrative portion attached to your will. And so that you can add this thing to your court cases when you're dealing with these criminal elements. So you can assign this to the record. We got people that's being stopped on the road. One of the first things that we need to do after we get all of our recording and videoing devices installed is to make you call the 911. Make sure you got the FBI's number. Where you can tell them to record the incident for you. So that you can get this information, retrieve this information from them to be used as evidence, okay? Because the only thing that has happened is you got a man with a gun and a badge, a man or a woman with a gun and a badge, and they are not officers of the law. These are private contractors, and they are out there robbing you, okay? Everything is about the currency. And we're forgetting who we are. We won't remember who we are. We won't fight back. We got this fear. We got this. We're saying the wrong thing to them, and all of this stuff. We're steady filling lines down at the driver's license bureau. We're taking the eye test, taking the driving test, and it's a big mess. But anyway. You have to do something about it. Area code 760. You still with us, man? Okay, so the brother's not with me, so I'm going to close this down. All right, now, we have 56 minutes listening in the broadcast, so if anybody got any questions, now's the time to raise your hand so that we can open up the line. Be right back in just a second.
I've been listening to you for a little while, and I was really questioning and concerning, like, about how to get the what would you call it, like the traveler's ID and things like that. Up here in Niagara Falls, New York, they're very racist. You can't even get a business if you don't have your own money. They make it hard for you to get a loan. And so, like, I was trying to get, like, a business loan and then trying to get my own, my ID without, you know, getting the driver's license and things like that. So I'm just after information. You know, we have a lot of people here in this city that if they had the information, they would act on it. But it's like we're in this little area over here where there's nothing.
Okay, well, what we have is if you send me a request for information, if you go to my website, newdebtelimination.com, you can just fill out the contact us form or either go to newdebtelimination.net.com or .net and fill out that little information request. We can send that to you to learn how to defend yourself against these people is something that's going to have to be learned. And we have this information available for you in my library. And that's over there on my website. Now, the first thing you want to understand is the whole United States of America operates on a continuous series of contracts under what's called contract law. But where we dropping the ball at is we don't stand that the United States of America does not interfere with your right to make contracts. So the problem is we haven't been formulating our own contracts. So when you learn how to formulate your contracts as far as your traffic is concerned and inside your freedom of rights to travel, you create your own contract. That's what I did. The license plate that I created, I simply did that on my computer. That's my contract. The ID I created, I did that on my computer. I gathered up all the Supreme Court rulings, put them in a book. I put my judicial notice and proclamation of status in there, clearly showing that I'm not a person, I am a man. And I put the manufacturer of the vehicle in there. I put other documentation that clearly shows them that I'm not a part of the game. Now, that is my identification. But when it came to exercising my freedom of right to travel, what is a good idea is you remember the contract thing. Create a contract and send that to the sheriff's department, clearly letting them know that you are reserving the right to exercise your freedom of right to travel. You also reserve the right to seek damages if this right is violated. And put them on notice of the fact that you've also sent a copy to the governor. And you also put a blast letter in there if you have to. But you want to put these people on notice because you created a contract that you can't enforce, you see. And when you're going to these institutions and asking them for loans and stuff of this nature, what we have to understand is that inside the United States, people of African descent has been designated as a permanent underclass of people. And the reason being is because we're allowing these people to get away with this. You see, these people are outnumbered, and we can deal with them. Do you have another question?
I have a million questions, but I can't hold your line up right there all night. But I'm after the Aboriginal information, and I'm going to go to your website, and I'm going to look, because I know there's money out there. I'm trying to look up the CESQ, trying to figure out what that is. You know, me and my cousin, we've been researching it. We're having a hard time, you know, trying to really get the information from me.
Well, go over to newdebtelimination.com. You see my little donation link up top. You see my library down there and the other packages and stuff that we have you can donate to. But that information is in there. About the birth bond is in there. There's a ton of information. We constantly add new information every week. There's new information added into this library every week. So once you get that, you have what's available, and you also have new information coming in. We have the files, They just haven't been added yet, but I add them at least once a week, and I put quite a bit of information in there every week. So knowledge is power, and this is what we need. We need to be empowered, and we got to do the research.
Yes. Okay.
Well, thank you for calling in. What's your name?
My name is Shanika Davis.
Sugar Baby. Okay,
no,
Sugar
Shanika
Baby.
Davis.
Oh, Shanika Davis. Okay. All right. I got it. I thought you said Sugar Baby. All right. I got it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. All right, area code 716, ending in 7176. Peace, sister.
Peace.
What's on your mind?
I have a question. If you get pulled over by, you know, police officers, and they ask you for your ID, is that something you have to give them? You know, I've seen, you know, tons of videos on YouTube where, you know, they'll say, well, you know, did I commit a crime? Is there an injured party? You know, you need to state your name. And do you commit a crime? Or, you know, because I see sometimes they're also giving you resisting arrest if you ask any questions.
Well, this is what I was telling the previous sister. What you want to do is, if you're going to exercise your freedom of right to travel, you want to learn about all the reasons why you can do that and what you have at your disposal. Put these people on notice of the fact that you're going to be doing this, and you've got a contract clearly showing, a documentation clearly showing that they have been sent this information. Everything they need to know is contained in this information. You've already reserved the right to sue these people when they roll you. So if you do that in advance, you're in good shape. You got some repercussions. You got something that you can come back on. You understand?
Right.
Now,
and when you say that, do you need to do that for all 50 states or all the continental United States if you travel, you know, from state to state?
Okay, well, now, this information is reserved for the state where you reside. But if you plan to travel in another state, if you're going to be moving to another state and living in another state, it may be a good idea if you do that over there as well. But you want to make sure that you understand that you have the right to make contracts. Follow through by creating a contract. If you're in New York City and you're going to be coming to Florida, put Florida on notice of what you intend to do. And when you do that, then they have evidence of the fact that you have reserved your right to travel, which is a right, and any obstruction, you might want to put a photograph of the vehicle. The fact that you do not have a state-issued plate or state-issued ID. You got your own ID that you've created, and which clearly shows that you are a woman or a man and not a fiction.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Cover yourself when you're dealing with these people, and because no evidence, no case, you see. And this is what you're doing. You're creating a situation of evidence. Before I got out on the road, I let you know that I was going to be out there. I'm not your property. I don't have anything to hide. This is my identification, which is not state issued. This is my place, which is not state issued. I reserve the right to sue you if I'm tampered with. So it's your move. But when we go out there and we do not, we haven't reserved anything. We got their drive, their property, which is their driver's license. We got a tag on the vehicle, which belongs to them. Our vehicle is not is registered with the DMV and all of these tentacles attached to us. Well, we just at their mercy because they got their contract. You got their contract. You bought into their contract. You got a driver's license, which is permission to do something you already got a right to do. And then you turn around and signed it. Even though your title on it, what you think is a name, is all capital letters indicating that you're dead. You're dead individual, and you got somebody else's property. You see. So we're going to have to rise above this thing and do something about it.
Okay.
You see? And if we can get more and more people to wake up to this thing, we can get something done. But you got to stop these people, and if you don't do nothing, they're going to keep on doing what they're doing, and because all they're doing is just gathering revenue. That's all they're doing, just gathering revenue. That's all. Just constantly robbing the people. When they cut the lights on, they're pulling you over as a robber. That's if you clearly understand that's what's happening. It's all about money. It ain't got nothing to do with law and the protection of somebody, none of that. No, because there's no injured party. That's what the Supreme Court ruled on, common sense ruling. Do you have another question?
Oh, no, that's good for now.
Okay. All right. Well, go ahead and send me a request for some information, and send that to huckup53@hotmail.com, and I'll send the articles that explain this whole system to you. Send them to you as attachments to your email, okay?
To Taraka53@Hotmail?
Yeah. TaraHaka. All right. Eric Coles, 954.
Hey, Brother Douglas.
You with me? Hey, man. What's going on?
Yeah. This is Empire May down in South Florida.
Okay, brother. What can we do for you?
All right. My question is, once you begin to exercise your right to travel and everything, right, for your state ID and, you know, your vehicle being registered under the DMV and all this, do you, like, get rid of all that stuff now, like, turn all that back in?
Well, what I would do is I would, if I had a vehicle, I would deregister that vehicle and I reserve any rights that I would have against the DMV in the event that something happened that I can hold them responsible for. And the same thing for the sheriff's department. You have a right to contract, and your identification is a contract. What license plate you put on your vehicle is a contract. You create your own and put them on notice of the fact that you are simply abiding by the decisions from the courts of the land. We say you have a right to travel. And I mean, it's been in existence for years and years and years. So you gather this information, put it in, put these people on notice of the fact of what you are going to do as a man or a woman.
So that's, you do the same thing for as your Class E driver license.
If you got a driver's license and you're working for a company and they're paying you, that company is paying you and you're using that, you're operating in commerce, so you want to have that with
you.
But when you get out of that vehicle, you're in your private vehicle, you're operating on the private, you're in the private, you don't need anybody's permission to travel.
Yeah. So I was just trying to see what it'd be like a conflict. But, you know, you still have that. I mean, you know, like you said, we work and everything. So, you know, they paying us everything. This ain't for driving, though. I mean, when we get ready to do this, you know, exercising your right to travel, and, you know, this on the file that, okay, you have a driver license and all this stuff, it won't conflict with, you know, you exercising your right to travel, even though you still have that.
Well, it's like this. If you have a driver's license,
Uh-huh.
Do you work for a company? Do you drive for a company? Do you?
No. No, I don't drive for a company.
If you don't drive for a company and you have a driver's license, you have the property that belongs to somebody else.
Yeah.
And if he approaches you and asks you for that and you give him that, you just entered into a contract with him. He just needs you to sign the ticket. They got you.
Okay.
But now, on the other hand, if you have put them on notice of the fact that you're not going to be doing that, and you're not a part of the game, here's why, and all that stuff. You know you don't have that. This is that. This is what identifies you as a man, and you do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Still holding on to that.
Sign something, and you enter the contract.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just trying to figure out that, like, I mean, do we just, you know, once we begin to do our, you know, exercise our right to travel, you know, and as everybody, you know, when they don't know nothing, you're supposed to get your license and do all this stuff. I'm just trying to make sure it won't be a conflict interest that, do we, like you said, we deregister our vehicles, or do we deregister our driver, like, get them back, they drive. Like, here you go, I'm no longer using this driver license anymore.
You can do that, too, and clearly explain to them why you're doing it. And draw the documentation, list all the information. You can do that, too. Of course you can. Yeah. Because the United States doesn't interfere with your right to make contracts. You have a right to make contracts. The problem is we've been signing everybody else's contracts. It's just creating our own.
That's true.
And that's why we've been getting taxed and run over, police stop, ticketed, and jail, and everything else. Because we won't study anything about law or anything. So if you send me a email requesting my free information to tahaka53@hotmail.com, I'll send this information to you, and you can read that, and that'll let you know what you're up against.
Brother Tucker, my wife calls you all the time. So we already long, though. Yeah. You already know who she is.
Okay.
Yeah, all so right. We already got the library. You know, she calls your body when it's down and all this other stuff. So.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, you already in that end. You got to go over there and, to the audio section and just go down the audio section. Because we got everybody in America. A black, white, everybody complaining about their robbery. We got to do some
kind of
stuff, man.
I know. I'm going to tell you just like this. You know, all the information is brand new. You see, guys, we've been programmed, you know, from infants to follow this procedure, right? And it's like it's just so much information out here that we don't know. And for me, I just don't know where to start at, you see. Like, the first thing I need to start working on, you know.
Well, all you got to do is, because I've teached over and over on these broadcasts, what I like, and I love this process called administrative process, where I simply send my initial affidavit. I send that to them with everything laid out for them. Everything can be verified and checked out. And give a time limit to respond. They don't respond. Then I send them a notice of default, the opportunity to cure, give them a little more time. And if they don't respond to that, then I send them a notice of default. All right. Now, if it comes to exercise your freedom of rights to travel, and you're only putting them on notice of the fact that you are going to be exercising this right. You got to be one of the sheeple. You're going to be some other than a sheeple, and you're going to start taking advantage of what belongs to you. That saves you the cost of the license. That saves you the cost of buying a registration. That saves you from somebody pulling you over on the road and holding you up, taking up your time, trying to force you at gunpoint into a contract with them.
All right.
So if you don't do anything about it, until you do something about it, the risk still lies outside your door. until you do something about it. This is something that you're going to have to sit down and do something about, and you don't wait the war time come to make ammunition. Peacetime,
right.
You make all the ammunition you're going to need when ain't nothing happening.
Yeah.
And then you, after you get it out there, then you get out there and test it out. Because you didn't already reserve the right to get paid if they roll you.
Yeah.
And you got evidence because you made a copy for them and a copy for you.
I hear you.
That's how I did. I mean, it worked for me. And I didn't, I never even got a chance to send a notice of default when my stuff came down there. They started running. And I ran over to the lawyer. The lawyer told him to get out of here. You have us too. And I said, well, okay. I said, that might have did it. He went and did all that. So I got out there on the pavement. And the police ignored me. One no more fun. And it was a mess, man.
I hear you, Brother Thompson. Yeah. You know, I'm a student, man. So I'm just, like I say, I'm just trying to learn all this stuff, you know, because there ain't no sense of me being in something that I don't even supposed to be in, you know? So
yeah. I'm you got to look at everything these people doing, you got to look at. If they
send
you something,
see that now.
Pop it over and read it and see what they're up to. Because this is a national robbery. Because, see, in the first place, the United States ain't got no citizens. Because if they had some citizens, if it was possible, then Walmart would have some. So they ain't got none.
Right.
We have, and there's no state. Even, you know, all you tell you is just a fiction. It's imaginary. Well, we run around telling about, well, I live in the state of Mississippi. What? You know, there is no state. And we have 250 million people. We got people, and they ain't steady treating you as if you are a person. In all capital letters. Just like I told the brother earlier, all I got to do is go to the cemetery and look at all the gravestones, all the names on there, and capital letters.
That's true.
They came to the world and went out of the world as persons, instead of acting out their life as people.
Yeah.
Now, I got to give some orders that's out, you know, soon, before I leave here, to make sure that if you put a gravestone out there, you better not have my name in no capital letters. I'll be the only one out there. But bottom line, any of them that's rolling you, you got to stop.
Yeah.
You got to stop. Because if you don't stop them, they're going to keep on doing it until you do.
That's true. That's true.
And it's all about the money. All about the business.
Yeah. I hate.
You got no question?
Well, that was it. I just was, you know, listening on it, and I just wanted to make sure that, you know, it wouldn't be a conflict of interest, you know, for us, you know, you doing that, though. Because I do desire to be free from these corporations.
Well, in order for you to be free, you had to, several ways you can do it, do it all at once, but you're going to have to make yourself free. And you can chip at it one at a time until you get all the little tentacles, the octopus moved off you. And make sure that they understand that who you are and you know, where you stand on the thing. You ain't got to be impolite. You got to be rude. You ain't got to be cousin and raising no hand and none of that. They just need to know that, okay, this guy here, he knows what he's doing, and if we tamper with this guy, it's going to cause us a problem. So the best thing for us to do is to leave this particular man alone.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about right there.
All right, brother. Well, I certainly appreciate you calling in, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
Okay, Moores. Now, if anybody got any more questions, the number to call is 310 972-982-4184. And I'll open up the line so you can get in. All right? Area code 716.
Greetings, Tahaga. This is Miera.
Okay, what's on your mind,
Miera? I have a question. Where does, when you cancel the contract of the driver's license, like if someone wanted to purchase a car, a new car, through a dealership, you know, they have you sign contracts and you have to show your driver's license and all this stuff. So how would you handle a situation like that? Or would it be just advisable to just, you know, not get a vehicle under, you know, in a contract like that?
Well, first of all, if I had to go out in a situation like that, the first thing I'll do, I carry me a little tape recorder with me, and I would inform them that I'm here to secure a vehicle, secure an automobile, and I need to secure the automobile. However, I don't have a driver's license because I do not drive. No one's paying me to drive. I do plan to exercise my freedom of right to travel. I'll supply my own identification and my own plates on my vehicle to clearly be identified. And I need you all to sell me this vehicle. Now, if he's telling me, and you want to get this on record, if he's telling me that, well, I can't sell your vehicle if you don't have no driver's license. So you ask him, are you telling me that in order for me to exercise my freedom of right to travel in one of your vehicles, that I need the property that belongs to the state in the form of a driver's license? I mean, you just go and gather this information, and you can walk away from the dealership and go home and formulate a contract off a verbal conversation. And you got recording. You can upload it to the computer, put it down on a DVD disc, and send that affidavit to him, and send a copy of that recording along with him and let him know how much you're suing him for attempted racketeering and extortion and conspiracy.
Okay.
Fire against you. And you may discover he may give you a call. Well, come on back down. We'll say you your ass.
So you said send a copy of the recording?
Yeah, you send a copy of the recording, let him know what you got. You got evidence. That's evidence.
Okay.
He clearly told you that in order for him to sell you a vehicle, you have to have somebody else's permission and somebody else's property. Your driver's license is not your property.
And also insurance. I know here in New York, they, you know, you can't even register a vehicle or anything like that. You have to have registration, driver's license, and car insurance before they even let you do that. So what I'm saying is that, okay.
The reason why this is happening is because we ain't suing these folks about this stuff.
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out, the procedure. So when you do go to the car dealership to get your vehicle and they tell you that you have to have a license, they want you to have car insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Okay. Well, I just tell you how to deal with it. See, just remember, the United States doesn't interfere with your right to make contracts. And no evidence, no case. So when you get these people telling you these things, ask the right questions. They'll give you the answers. Record this information, because this is information that you can enforce. And put draw up the affidavit. Write it out where this is wrong at, and have them explain to you how is it possible when I have a right to travel, and you're telling me in order for you to sell me a vehicle, I have to have property belonging to somebody else. In other words, you're obstructing justice for me exercising a right by converting a right into a crime right there in the car dealership, and we are seeking damages in the amount of X amount of dollars. We have proof. As a matter of fact, here's a copy of it for you, so you know what you're going to go up against. You understand?
Okay. So you're going to tell them that you're you don't have a license because you're exercising your constitutional rights.
I'm exercising. We're not dealing with a constitution or anything. The Supreme Court will rule over and over and over that you don't need a driver's license to travel. But if they're telling you that you've got to have a driver's license in order to have a vehicle, then we have a problem. You're going to get them.
Okay.
You're going to get them. And you want to make sure that you gather evidence. You can bring a little old tape recorder in there with you. Put it in your pocket. Cut it on. Sit down with them. Let them give you the conspiracy thing and the fraud and the obstruction of justice and put it all over there and then upload it to your computer. Put it on a disk so it'll be nice and handy for the mayor, the governor, everybody else. And you might want to get one of them too. And send that affidavit on down there to them, and I'll give them X amount of days to answer the affidavit because you got all the evidence right there.
Okay. So you're going to send an affidavit to the car dealership?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're telling you your vehicle had to be registered with the DMV. According to who? You got to have a driver's license. And in order to get a vehicle from me, according to who? Now, you go to a check cashing place and tell them you want to fill out a check cashing card, and they say, well, you got to have, we're going to need your Social Security number. Do you have a Social Security card? No, I have a Social Security card to give you. Well, we can't let you do it. You really? I need the mailing address to your boss and tell him a Social Security card is not identification. We're seeking damages in the amount of $5,000 for fraud.
You can put your own amount on the damages
amount.
That
you're seeking? Yeah, always. Always put a dollar amount down up in there when you're dealing with them.
Okay.
You see, because we got people who are doing all kind of stuff, but because we're not doing anything about it, they're continuing to do it until you do something about it.
Okay.
And then after you get the vehicle, you do read down at the bottom of the contract, it tells you that you cannot discharge this vehicle until after 6 months. Well, after 6 months, tell them to send your payout bill, APV it, and attach a 1099 OID to it and a 1040D, and put them on notice of the fact that you've already notified the Internal Revenue Service that this is discharged. That's the end of that.
Okay.
You give them your signature on the contract, so that's paid for. You got another question?
No, I'll let someone else have the mic for now. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Peace.
You're welcome. Area code 816. 816.
Hotel.
Hotel, brother.
Hey, I got a question for you, brother. I'm still a citizen, if you say. I'm still a citizen. Now, everything that you talked about, can I practice that while I'm a citizen, or will I have to go to will I have to be in sovereign status?
Well, you're a strange individual. You're a citizen of what?
Citizen, I guess I'm a citizen of, by their paperwork, I'm a citizen of the United States of America, supposedly.
You can't be a citizen. United States is a corporation. Walmart has some. How you can be a corporation with citizens? Corporations have employees. Employee identification numbers, all that kind of stuff. But what is your question now?
My question is, until I can become sovereign, can I still use everything that you're talking about so far as police, sending in information to the DMV, so forth? Can I still use that information that you're providing even though I'm still part of this corporation?
Well, yes, you can. But once you start learning this stuff, then you realize that the word citizen that you're talking about is the first thing we need to get rid of. But exactly. Yeah, you can. You just need a little bit more understanding. So if you send me a request for my free information, I go to my website and fill out the little contact us form, and newdebtelimination.com. We'll send you these documents to you so you can read that and get right. And then for any deeper study you want to do, you get the little archives of Master Library over there, and we'll send that to you, and then you can learn this stuff. Because we're going to have to learn the definition, because what these people are doing, they are regarding us as their property and stuff. And that's why I played the clip at the outset of the broadcast where the guy clearly told you about the state, clearly told you about citizens and people and all of that. So once we get this thing down to a science, then we can operate. We can deal with them. We can formulate our contract and serve them.
Correct. Okay. I know I'm not. I have one more thing. Can you please spell out your the website or the email that you've been giving out?
Okay, my email is Tahaka, TARHAKA 53 at hotmail.com. The website is www.newdebtelimination.com.
Okay. NewDebtElimination.com. Okay. That'll work. I do very much appreciate it, brother.
Hey, you're welcome, man. We certainly appreciate you calling in.
Hotep, you have a good evening.
Okay. You too. Now, we don't have but 16 more minutes to go, but we're going to give you a little bit more of this kind of information so that we can understand. We're going to deal with the law in you. So once you pay a close attention, we're not going to run it all. We'll give you a little bit of it. And pay attention.
Over the years, I've seen so many changes in the law. And once upon a time, we were free to travel on the roads. We could never be stopped, but gradually over the years I've seen all our rights and freedoms taken away from us. So what I've done is put this law presentation together to hopefully show you how and why we are sucked into the system and what you can do about it. So is the law deliberately confusing? Because I believe it's designed this way for a deliberate reason, is that lawyers and the courts can keep you tied up indefinitely to make money out of you. It's a very clever system. Because once upon a time there was only God's law, but now we've got all different types of laws. We've got maritime laws, we've got contract laws, we've got estate law, equity law, merchant, statute, bylaws, and regulations, which are all designed to tie us up to into their system. And the only way that we can see a way out of it is by hiring a lawyer or something like that to and paying them a fortune to get us off the charges that they lay against us. So why do we need all these laws, and how do they enslave us? So hopefully tonight we can show you what they have done to you, and you might be able to find a way out of the system. Now, a lot of the clues are contained in the Bible, and I've taken things from the Bible, and 1 Samuel 8, verse 1 to 22, it tells you in there how they do it. And it says, they will take a tenth of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. Now, it's a bit vague there, so let's look a little bit further. Have you ever heard possession is nine-tenths of the law? Because this is exactly what it is. They have title over us. The title is what keeps us in the system. They hold title over us, our land, our cars, our children, and everything else. Once upon a time, we used to have ownership papers for our cars, but back in the 90s, they took away the ownership papers, and now they totally own the cars, and that's why they can confiscate them on the side of the road. And if you don't believe me, just do something wrong and see what happens, especially the boy racers. Now, they do this in a variety of ways, but the main way that they use is by using words. So they use these words that we think are quite normal and people use them in everyday life. But when you go to Bovier's Law Dictionary, you'll see that they're quite different to what we think they are. So when you're born, you arrive in the delivery room. So nothing sinister about that, is there? Until you look it up. Delivery means the transferring of possession from one person to another. Now, every time possession is transferred, a trust is formed in equity. This happens by law, automatically by law. Birth, the act of a child being born. But if you look at birth, it's exactly the same word. They've just changed the I and the E. So we need to have a look at what birth actually means. So we go to Bovier's Law Dictionary, and you can find this by going to Google. Look up Bovier's Law Dictionary, then go to certificate. Certificate. There are two kinds of certificates, those required by the law and those which are merely voluntary. Of the first kind of certificates given to an insolvent on his discharge, but now the one we want, and that says, and those given to aliens that they have been naturalized. So here's one of the first clues. As soon as you get a birth certificate, you are an alien and you have been naturalized. Oh. How can they do that? They ask your parents to register you at birth. Now, when you get registered, you give away your freedoms and you obtain benefits. Once upon a time, you didn't register your children or your marriage. You just put it in your family Bible. And then slowly, the churches took over that role and used to enter you in the church registries. So when title is transferred, a trust is formed, as we said earlier. So your birth registration transfers title to a foreign situs trust. And that's the first trust they set up for you. Now, once again, we go back to the Bible, but with all these laws came later than the original. The originals were what we call the papal bulls. Now, the papal bulls were put out by the popes, Pope. The papal bulls took away all our rights, and so if you want to go back further, you will find them, but after these papal bulls were put out, then the legislators put in the laws to get us to believe, because we elected them, that they could put in these things for our benefit. So we go back to the Bible and have a look at what it says. It says, beware the mark of the beast. And the number of the beast was 666. Now, back in 1666, two things happened in London. We're only talking about London here, but someone set London on fire in what we call a false flag operation, because Parliament needed to rush through the Sedeke-Vai Act 1666. So while everyone was busy putting out the fire, the fire of London, the Sedeke-Vai Act was being rushed through Parliament. So we need to see in Bovier's Law Dictionary what Sedeke-Vai means. Now, I've already shown you how to go to Google and look up words, so please do yourself a favour and actually go online or get a copy of these books and go through and look them up yourself. Don't take my word for anything. But Sedeke-Vai, he for whose life land is holden by another. The latter is called tenant per atravai, or tenant for another's life. So what they're doing is, by putting you in these trusts, they have put in a tenant for your life. And Sedekiah Act, if you go back to the Bible, says that from the dust of the earth, God created man in his own image. The Sedekiah Act did that. It created man made of paper, which is just a title, and it looks exactly like us. So what they're saying is we created man in his own image. So if you look at your all capitals name, it looks just like you. Once again, we'll go to Google and we'll look at legislation, New Zealand legislation that is, and so this is how you find it. Go down, unclick the box there, and then go to the Land Transfer Act. And you might find something very interesting in the interpretation here. Land. Land includes messuages, tenements, and hereditaments, corporeal and incorporeal. Corporeal means real and incorporeal means not real. Of every kind in the description and every estate or interest therein. Okay, so what we are is an estate. Now they have created an estate and they call it land. And we will find out when an act says it includes something, everything else is excluded. So if you go to Bouvier's and look at the maxim, inclusio unius est exclusio ulterioris, the inclusion of one is the exclusion of another. Now, quite often through this presentation, we're going to be looking at words that are defined in different acts. And you need to know that if it includes something, then it excludes everything else. So if it does not include what they are saying, then it is excluded. The Births, Deaths and Marriages Registration Act 1995 says that birth includes a stillbirth. Now we've already said if it doesn't include, it must exclude. So does birth include a live birth? Obviously not. Child includes a stillborn. Does it include a live born? Obviously not. So straight away you're starting to get a picture of what's happening here, because your birth certificate is actually your death certificate. So let's have a little recap here. When you're born, the hospital issues a live born certificate with weight to the government. Now the weight is very important and still measured in ounces. The husband registers the child under the Births, Deaths and Marriages Act. The government registers a foreign situs trust in real name, the same as your birth certificate. Now this is actually a bond. Your birth certificate is a bond, and that bond gets sold off onto the markets. The World Bank, as settler, settles your trust with your birth weight in gold. So when they say that you're worth your weight in gold, they're not lying. Okay, they sell that bond off onto the markets, and it is in gold. So let's look at what a foreign situs trust is. And it refers to a trust created under foreign law. So it's law that is not, that is foreign to us. Now if you look at situs situation, real estate is always a fixed situs, while personal estate has no such fixed situs. The law re site regulates real but not the personal estate. So that's what a foreign situs trust is. If you study that, you will get the idea of what a foreign situs trust is. Now, once again, it's all in the language, and so what they're saying is that you were birthed. Well, ships get birthed too, don't they? But I can tell you that you were born alive and kicking. But by registering your birth with the government, your parents inadvertently killed you, in law that is, not in real life. Because once you die, a new set of rules applies. And this is the whole trick. If you have died without leaving a will, what happens? Someone is appointed to manage your trust estate, your trust account or your estate for you, because you have died intestate. And if you've ever been down to the local tombstones, you can verify this, because all tombstones are spelt in all capitals. And if you ever see anything that the government sends you, it will be in all capitals. But as you're dead at law, you will, and you did not leave your last will and testament, it means that you died intestate. So someone's going to be looking after your estate for you, and along comes the public trust, and they apply to the family court to manage your estate for you. Well, how do you do that, they say? So, well, let's look at it. It's done under the Protection of Personal and Property Rights Act. Once again, we'll have a look at the legislation, and that is the form that they use. Application for order to administer property. So once they take that to the court, and of course it's just a rubber stamp, naturally they get it because no one's going to contest it, because you're still a babe in arms and your parents don't know a thing about what's going on. So,
okay, Moore, we come to the end of the broadcast. That was Bill Turner, The Law in You. Bill Turner, you can catch that over there on YouTube. Just type in The Law in You, Bill Turner, or Bill Turner, The Law in You. And you can see this thing in its entirety. It'll last, let's say, how long is this thing? 38 minutes and 15 seconds. But we run out of time on the broadcast, and I will come back in the future and run the entire thing here but for the radio business audio. But we come to the close. And I hope you all got something out of this broadcast. And keep in mind about the other shows that will be coming on, which will be Friday at 11 o'clock, the Grand Nicole show. And then we have another one that will be coming up Thursday. I'll be on another daytime show. But in the meantime, I certainly appreciate you all for being on this show. I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Big. Good night.